The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist, Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 5, and it's powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. Check out my work on BleedingGreenNation.com. As always, I'm joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 7-year streak. Excuse me, 8-year streak without a bad day. That's how many good days he's had. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben. How you doing, brother?
Oh, still a good day, Mike, as always. I had many a folk ask me over the past couple of days during roster cuts if it was still a good day because Danelle Pumphrey was cut and then not included on the practice squad, to which I respond, yeah, worse things have happened to me in my life than a guy getting cut off the Philadelphia Eagles. So I will be able to endure. Thank you. It's important to note, as I went back to make sure that I knew what I was talking about, the Eagles drafted Danelle Pumphrey at the end of the 4th round. I had Danelle Pumphrey as my running back 12 with a mid-4th round valuation. So really, they drafted him right around where I thought he would be successful, and I liked 11 other backs in the class better than him. Which is important things to note when it comes to, you know, clowning on me for the fact that he got cut. Also, obviously, I really liked him just as like a person, and I liked his style of play. I liked his story. I thought he would be a good player in the NFL, and he wasn't. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he simply could not keep that hamstring healthy. And if you want any evidence to the fact that his hamstring is in a bad place, the fact that the Eagles did not practice squat him is, I think, very clear evidence to that. Because he was your 4th-round pick 2 years ago, and you IR'd him his first year, so he didn't get much practice time. You haven't worked with him that much. And so the only reason you would not be practice squatting that player is if you really thought he had no redeemable future, especially over like a Wendell Smallwood or a Josh Adams, who you invested more capital in more recently. And so simply a player who tried to put on a ton of mass for the pre-draft process and probably did some serious, you don't want to say irreparable, because you don't really know, but somewhere in that ballpark damage to his hamstring. And so that's a shame. It's a sad thing. And obviously I'm disappointed to see Pumphrey go. He's one of my guys. But yeah, it's still a good day. Close one, but I made it.
I'm shocked that your emotional stability is not tied to a 4th-round running back that you had as running back 12. I'm very proud of you to be able to work through that.
I'd love to say if you asked, you know, the general listeners and readers, then you would think that my emotional stability was tied to Pumphrey. But it's not just them. If you asked Brandon Lee Gowen, then you would assume my emotional stability was tethered to a 4th-round running back. Yeah, it's a good time.
So, yeah, we're going to be updating you, gentle listener, on all the practice squad moves. There was a trade. There was a waiver claim, which caused a cut. We're going to get you updated on that right now. before we get into the main topic, which is going to be over-unders for the season. We'll be going through some individual players. We'll talk about over-unders on the win-loss total, all that. So before we get to all that, we want to get you into the pressing news. Right after the roster cuts dropped, after me and Brandon Lee Gowton did our reaction pod, of course, like literally right as I was posting it, this trade happened.
Yeah, Howie was listening. And once he heard you guys stop recording, because he was listening live, he decided to make the trade.
As soon as I got in my car, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I did not delay my massage. I still went and got that. So now we got to talk about it. So the Eagles traded a conditional 7th round pick to bring in DeAndre Hall, the safety from the Chicago Bears, which likely means, and he's dealing with a 1-game suspension coming into this season, so he doesn't count against the roster quite yet. It could be bad news for Trey Sullivan, the safety that made the roster, once week 2 rolls around. And I would say, based on what I've seen from DeAndre Hall, he's a converted corner to safety, but he also played both corner and safety in college at Northern Iowa. In fact, his last season there, he played both positions. I would say he's a more reliable tackler. He is part of that size profile that they're looking for, that they were trying to bring in with Darrell Worley, with the long arms, big guy, real sound tackler, like what he brings to the table as far as that goes. I think he comes in as our fourth safety if he sticks. So there's that. Then you've also got the Eagles have claimed former Seattle Seahawks linebacker DJ Alexander, who is a special team stud, actually made the Pro Bowl as reserve for special teams, and claiming him takes Joe Walker out of a job, so he's out. And then we have the, and I'm actually happy about that. If you listen to the projection show that I had, you'll know that I wanted Joe Walker to go once Bradham came back, and I wanted Leroy Reynolds to stay. So I'm very happy about all of that, and we get a very good special teams player to replace some of that value there. Looking at the Eagles practice squad members right now, it is at 8 out of 10. There's running back Josh Adams, who sticks with us. I guess the market wasn't as strong as some people made it out to be with him. Who knew? Oh, me and Ben. That's right. Moving on.
Whoops.
Tight end Billy Brown sticks on the practice squad. Wide receiver Rashard Davis, who I thought had a good preseason, he stays. Greg Ward Jr. as well. Center John Toth.
Yeah.
Defensive end Joe Osman. I like him. The rookie out of Central Michigan, UDFA. He sticks. Defensive tackle Winston Craig. And linebacker Asante Brown. There's still probably going to be a little bit of moving and shaking if we know Howie. Then right after we're done recording, there's going to be another trade or some sort of nonsense. But we'll be here to cover it throughout the week, because we're going to be recording a lot during this week as we lead into week 1 of the regular season as the Eagles try to defend their title. Ben, out of all those moves, do any of those stick out to you?
I will say I really like the fact that Joe Osman made it onto the practice squad, because when he was drafted, Mike, I remember saying it's such a good situation to be in as a young rusher to get into that Philadelphia locker room, because there are so many good pass rushers on Philadelphia, and there's a lot to learn, and there's a lot to get exposed to. And obviously going up against a fantastic offensive line doesn't hurt either, right? When it comes to Osman, we assumed, at least me watching him in camp, yeah, this guy's good enough that if he gets cut, he should go somewhere else and somebody should be picking him up and seeing what they got. But, you know, undrafted free agent, clearly wasn't valued at that level come draft time. And then there wasn't enough, increase in value across training camp. So he gets to spend a year on the practice squad working with some of the NFL's best pass rushers against some of the NFL's best pass protectors. That can't be bad news. And this was a player who I thought already coming out was pretty technically polished for a rookie. And so I think that he has a nice potential there in the practice squad. The two that I would circle would be him and then Rashard Davis, the one that you identified as players who had some flashy moments at camp. And if they can parlay their practice squad time into improved technical understanding, then they have a chance to make more noise when we start, you know, wrapping around back to this time in 2019. So those are the two guys I'm interested in on the practice squad. Obviously, you know, Josh Adams as well is a player that they've decided that they're interested in. When it comes to DJ Alexander and Joe Walker, athletic profiles are pretty similar. Alexander had a slightly higher, you know, just draft caliber. He was a 5th-round pick for the Chiefs. Right. He's probably got a better pass rushing upside in that regards. But yeah, to me, this looks like trading a special teamer for a special teamer you don't know as well. So maybe he's more than that. Joe Walker couldn't cover.
Yeah.
That doesn't cut the cheese. Simple as that.
Yeah, and I thought Leroy Reynolds showed out better in that area as far as the coverage goes, too. So I'm happy about that. Were there any players that didn't make it? Obviously, we already covered Pumphrey. That's old news by now, and we can finally move on from that. But Jeremy Reeves was one guy that I would hope would stick on the practice squad and did not. I thought, you know, You know, at the Senior Bowl, we saw him tackle really well, and he had a couple of really good days in coverage. And in the game, he had 14 tackles. I thought his tackling was up and down in the preseason. Missed some tackles he should have made, took some bad angles, and that's where I think where they value DeAndre Hall, because he's definitely improved as a tackler in the NFL. I've got an article dropping on him today around the time that later on in the day after this pod releases, but I've watched his film. I've gone back. I went back to his college film. I went back to some preseason film. I went back to him against the Eagles in 2016, where Nelson Aguilar made him look silly. Watched him a lot, and I liked his game. So that safety position is a little bit deeper than it was before. So Reeves doesn't get to stick. That was the one I was disappointed about, because I do like his game.
Yeah, and to me, if there's no DeAndre Hall trade, then Reeves is probably a quick practice squad guy.
Yep.
Like, that's not a tough one. But all of a sudden, you're adding another safety in the mix. It kind of bumps the bottom of the barrel down. Simple as that. Reeves is not going to be a high priority add for other teams. So he's going to be a guy who potentially floats around for a while. And so, you know, the Eagles have had, offensive linemen like Aaron Evans, and maybe Jeremy Reeves is a guy they just pick up and drop off and pick up and drop off and pick up and drop off, which is obviously a tough spot to put a guy in. But it might just be where, you know, Philadelphia feels as if they can put him on the street, and they'll be able to bring him back if need be. To me, the DeAndre Hall trade makes a lot of sense in that regard.
Steven Means is a vested vet, and although the Eagles right. did not put him on the roster, he was not subject to waivers. Ben, do you predict that the Eagles have pretty much an understanding with him where they're going to bring him back onto the roster, or do you think he goes elsewhere?
Right. So the vested vet consideration, if he's not on the roster week one, then the team can basically bring him back and just pay him week by week. It's unguaranteed game checks for however long you're on the roster. You get a game check, and that's about it. Very convenient for the team. Obviously, for the player, a little bit trickier. Now, there's considerations to be had for what contract Steven Means would sign as far as the game check, how much that figure would be if he were to come back. And if that's something that, you know, Howie and Steven have a handshake deal on with his agent, then, you know, that's something that currently exists. Steven Means has a fantastic relationship with the people in that building. So I can promise you him being cut was either one, under the consideration that using the different legislation around vested vets, that Means was going to get brought back and he was going to be a contributor for the team, and it was just a cap move. Or two, it was the team saying, listen, like, you know, we can't give you the playing time you deserve. We can't give you the cash you deserve. Go somewhere else and go get it. Yeah. Steven Means was not an immediate roster add, which is interesting, because you would assume that if he were a free game, if he were a guy that was looking actively for a new job, he would be fielding offers right now. Maybe he is fielding offers, but, you know, he's got something in place with Philadelphia. Steven Means was not cut because he's bad at football. Steven Means is good at football. Steven Means was not cut because Philadelphia didn't have, like, you know, the immediate cap room to hold on to him. There has to be a secondary consideration, likely one of the two that I listed, as far as what I understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a surprising name to see off. So there's got to be something more going on there.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And we'll see how that plays out. And of course, we'll keep you updated here at Bleeding Green Nation. Now, moving on to our main topic of the show. We're going to be talking over-unders, and we're going to be going through some individual players, and then we'll give our prediction for the over-under on wins for the year. These are ones that BLG sent over to me and wanted us to discuss, so there might be some traps in here. You never know. We have seen them. We have looked them over. We have thought about it with our brain balls, so let's just get right into it. First up is Carson Wentz, and we'll talk about the yards and the touchdowns together before we get into the interception. So yards and touchdowns, the over-under on yards is 3,800 yards. So last year, 3,296 passing yards in 13 games. You extrapolate that over 15 games, you get 3,296 passing yards in 13 games last year. You extrapolate that over 15 games. Right on the head, 3,802 is what that would work out to, Ben. You got to figure he throws around 500 to 550 passes, I think would be a good guess, which if he keeps up the 7.5 yards per attempt from last year, that puts you in a range from about 3,750 to 4,125 yards. Okay. Now, I think that 7.5 yards per attempt number comes down a little bit, and I'm going to call it 7.2, which puts you at a range of 3,600 to 3,960. And that's close. So Then you add in the other factor of him possibly missing week two as well. We don't know if he's, you know, playing week two. We don't know exactly when he's coming back. You can't rule it out, even though I think he plays. So it's even closer. But if you're going to protect Wentz like we talked about and bring that average depth of target down on play action via the RPO, I think I'll go under, Ben. And really, there's nothing wrong with that. Yards are a bit of a meaningless stat. It's more about efficiency. And as far as the touchdowns, the over-under is at 27 touchdowns. I'm going to smash the over on this. They're too good in the red zone.
Oh, wow.
And even though I think he gets less opportunities down there because we'll see a positive regression to the mean in terms of red zone running, I can't see him throwing less than 27 touchdowns. I'm not expecting the same pace he was on last year by any means, but this one is pretty easy for me. So I'll go over and I'm pretty confident about it. What about you, Ben?
You understand 7.5 per, touchdown percentage last year for Carson was by far the league lead. Ah. Next highest was 6.7, which is Rodgers. And then it's 6.1 with Wilson, and kind of the numbers chill around that 6-5 area pretty much down the list. You know, 27 touchdowns would put him at an eighth on the list last season. While you might want to lean towards the over a little bit, I might still be there. I think it's going to be much closer than 27. I'm not smashing it the way that you might be. I would be, that would be the bet I would step away from. And 3,800 passing yards, I'm going to hit the over on that. Huh. That's the one where I'm going to take the over on it. Yeah, simply because, and you brought up the point where you said you thought the 7.5 yards per attempt was going to go down. I personally think it's going to stay either around or potentially go up. I think that he has a better deep threat in Mike Wallace this year than he had last year.
True.
I think that he'll have a 100% healthy Alshon Jeffrey down the field, which he didn't have last year. And I also think that the Eagles ripped a lot of second-level RPOs, manipulating linebackers and safeties down in the box last year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the natural extension from that becomes third-level RPOs and manipulating deep safeties.
Yeah.
When a defense goes to respond to second-level RPOs, what they start doing is they start spinning their safeties and they start rotating their safeties late at the snap to put an extra defender onto the play side that they anticipate. And so you're now exposing yourself deeper because you're anticipating that quick RPO throw, which happens within 1.52 seconds of the snap.
Yeah.
So I think that the natural counter to defenses playing heavy downfield against RPOs is taking more deep shots on one-on-one throws. So I would not be super shocked to see that 7.5 number stay around or go up. And I'm also still more bullish on Carson playing 15 to 16 games. To me, he's a guy who looks incredibly spry. That being said, did you watch the Doug Presser today?
Oh, yeah, he was irritated. I only saw clips of it. He was super irritated, man.
That was terrifying. I was in shock. Oh, my gosh. I almost could not get out of my seat when the presser ended. I just couldn't move. It was rigor mortis, man. It was the worst.
We needed Wentz back for Doug. That's what we really need it back for, because he is
Poor guy, man. He just wants to talk about literally anything else.
So let's talk more about Carson Wentz, because we still have to do the interceptions. So we were opposite on touchdowns and yards. Let's see if we're the same on interceptions. The over-under is at 10.5. So only 7 interceptions last year, which cut in half his 14 from a year prior. Is it awful if he has 12 or 13 this year? He's a bit of a risk taker. He's going to throw some balls into some spots that other quarterbacks won't even try. And you got to be able to live with the upside and the downside of that. And I know people cringe when this following phrase is brought up, but I believe it to be true that he had some turnover luck early in the season and then got more responsible as the season progressed. So this one's a tough one, but I'm going to go over. So I'm going over on touchdowns and I'm going over on interceptions. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad sign on the interceptions. I just think it's slightly over. So what about you, Ben?
I mean, you probably already know where I am on this one. Simply, I'm probably going to be taking the over on this solely because, one, Carson's a slinger. I'm totally fine with my quarterback throwing 15 interceptions. Couldn't care less.
Right.
You know, well, obviously care a little bit if they're really bad decisions. But put the ball out there. Throw up some 50-50 balls, you know? And then number two, which is crucially important, is that interceptions aren't necessarily the stickiest of stat. They are highly, highly, highly circumstantial. And so if we're just looking at a interceptions across the league for starting quarterback sort of a situation, the majority of your starting quarterbacks in the league are throwing right around 10, 11 interceptions. And then I think you add in the fact that Carson tends to take some risks and take some shots because that's his style of play. you know, it's tough to keep interception numbers very, very steady year to year
right.
because of the amount of nonsense that goes into crazy interceptions. Like, Aaron Rodgers had an incredible string of no interceptions at home, and we, like, love to talk about this string that he had. And then you go watch the tape, and he had, like, 6 dropped ones,
yeah.
right? And then last season, Matt Ryan is, like, among, like, the league leaders in interceptions thrown, and you go and you watch the tape, and there's, like, 95, like, drops, batted up, kicked off somebody's leg, deflected the line of scrimmage, off a helmet, interceptions sort of nonsense.
Right.
It's just all wild. So interception isn't really one to bet, but if I were taking it, I would probably take the over.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. It's yeah, there's a lot of different things that can go into an interception. So that's not, like I said, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We want to take some risks. We want to take some shots downfield. We can live with some interceptions. Moving on to the running game, Jay Ajayi, total rushing yards, and then we'll do touchdowns as well. We'll ball it together. So the over-under for rushing yards is at 950. I've been back and forth on this, but ultimately, it comes down to how the Eagles want to use him. And I don't think that they want to expend him like a workhorse in the regular season. They'll need him for the postseason. They can get efficiency out of Clement, out of Sproles, who also contribute a lot in the passing game. And yeah, it's his contract year and all that. But what's the point of using him up in the regular season if he's beat up later? Just because it's his contract year doesn't mean that we just, you know, beat him down to a nub. And by the time the playoffs come, he's worthless to us. Let's let somebody like Smallwood take those fourth quarter run the clock carries when we're up double digits. I'm fine with that.
Man, if Smallwood's going to be active, I'm going to be pissed. But sorry, continue.
You know what I mean. Smallwood, let Clement take him. Let whoever you want to let take him. Take them. Just don't beat up Jai for 20 carries a game. If we're winning by double digits, it just doesn't make good sense to me. And then for the touchdowns, this is total touchdowns, rushing and receiving touchdowns in 2018. The over under is set at 6.5. We've talked about the positive boost in red zone running before for the Eagles. Last year, Blunt wasn't effective from inside the 5. And despite doing well in other areas, that was one area where he was lacking. Ajayi is 5-for-11 all time in his career from runs inside the 5. I think he eclipses 6.5, not by much, but I think he gets enough opportunities to get there. What say you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. We start with the yardage situation. And last year, Philadelphia as a team rushed for over 2,000 yards,
right?
They were cooking at it. Now, the question really is going to become, how many yards do you think Darren Sproles takes up as a rusher? So, gun to your head, how many yards is Sproles rushing for this year?
Let's go 400.
See, here's what's pretty crazy. Darren Sproles rushed for 400 yards the last season he was healthy in 2016, right? He rushed for 438 yards. The next most recent season he did that was 2011 with New Orleans. And between then, 244, 220, 329, 317, right? So that's four straight seasons of not hitting 400 yards.
Yeah.
Now we got him in his oldest season coming back from injury. I don't think he gets close to 400 yards, right? And then so then the next question we have to ask ourselves, okay, well, how many yards is Corey Clement rushing for? So gun to your head, how many yards is Corey Clement rushing for?
I'd probably go like 650 for him, 650, 700.
Right, 650, 700. Last year, he rushed for only 320 yards. So we're assuming that, and that's on 74. That's a 4.3 yard per attempt. That's pretty good. But we're assuming he doubles his yard output, doubles his touches, and he's able to keep his yards per attempt steady at the increased volume. To me, Eagles need Ajayi to be hitting 1,000 yards. Like, that's, like, necessary. That's got to happen. You're not going to feed Sproles true rushing touches. And Corey's a good player. I don't know if we're going to see that much of a leap at that, still that same level of efficiency, right? And so I'm looking for Ajayi to absolutely clear 1,000 yards. And really, if you look at it like on a per game basis, as far as how many touches it would really get for him to be hitting that, because the one thing we don't want is for Ajayi to get worn down. You know, if you're doing just a 4 yard per carry average as the bell cow back, to hit 1,000 over 16 games, you need 15, 16 carries a game.
Right.
I think that's like, you know, obviously if you're hitting perfectly 4. I think 15, 16 carries a game is very reasonable for Jay Ajayi, especially without LeGarrette Blount eating up carries as a fourth quarter closer, that physical guy they like to bring in. Again, that could be Corey. They could be moving that around. Like you said, if Wendell's active, then maybe it's Wendell. But I think he sees enough touches per game where if he's around 4 yards per carry, which he should be with that offensive line in front of him, 1,000 makes a lot of sense. So yeah, I really strongly anticipate the 1,000. The touchdowns, man, like, remember, like, in the middle of the season last year where, like, Philly had, like, 3 players all with 8 touchdowns?
Yeah.
Like, Alshon, Ertz, and Aguilar. I think it was seven. I think they all had seven. Yeah. And like the most receiving touchdowns in the league was nine. And the Eagles had like three in the top eight because this team just moves the ball around so much in the red zone. Yeah. It's so tricky. You know what I mean? Like Corey Clement went and got caught two touchdowns against the Patriots. Third string running back, undrafted free agent. Like your touchdown output in Philadelphia is not heavily correlated to talent.
Right.
It's usage and matchup. So it's very, very tricky. I like the fact that receiving got thrown in there, because backs having the potential to take screens when you get inside of the 30, that's prime screen territory. Obviously working little flare routes, working little, you know, back throws, whatever you got going on, just like in the flats when you're within the 10. Like, these are common things that are done. So I like that that's added there. I'd stay away from that one. I'd probably lean under, but 1,000 over is the one that I think I would take pretty comfortably.
Yeah, and I think we're, for each running back, I think we're about 100 to 200 yards away from each other, which is, when you think about it, over 16 games, not that big of a difference. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm glad that we're having some disagreements because last time we did this, I beat you with the NFL draft over and unders, and I feel confident.
Wow, I'm going to keep it 100. That felt unnecessary.
A lot of the things I do are unnecessary and petty, Ben. You know this. Don't act surprised. All right, so we're moving on to Mike Wallace, total receiving yards in the 2018 regular season. Over under is set at 600 yards. It would be only the second time in his career that Wallace would be under 600 if he doesn't do it this year. The other time was his 1 year stint in Minnesota back in 2015. I want to say under because there's so many weapons in the passing game. But by that same token, Torrey Smith had to deal with just about the same amount of weapons around him, still put up 430 yards. I think Wallace is 200 yards better than him any day of the week and provides a more consistent three-level receiver than Smith has ever been. I'll go over, but not by much. Touchdowns, 3.5. Again, Torrey Smith had two touchdowns. I think Wallace is a substantial upgrade. I would put him around 5. You never know what's going to happen in the red zone. As me and Ben have been talking about, they move the ball around so much, it's really hard to tell. And it doesn't, again, it's not too indicative of talent. It's just opportunity. But I think he gets around 5. So I'm going to go over for Mike Wallace. Ben, what you got?
Yeah, okay. Firstly, the most important thing is this. When I went to the Pro Football Reference site to start deciding what I wanted to do for Mike Wallace, I realized that his first name is Burnell. That's what they have listed. They have Burnell Michael Wallace. So I'm like, yo, I'm not going to be like, yo, Burnell, and see what happens. But actually, I'm not going to do that because that's not okay. But still, Burnell's a cool name. Major focus here is this. Yeah, Baltimore, a man put out just in that season alone, I believe it was around, he put up 748 yards against Baltimore. Yeah. Okay, but here's the crazy thing. His first game with the Ravens this last season, 8 yards. Week 2, 7 yards. Week 3, 6 yards. Week 4, 55. All of a sudden, he got 10 targets after only seeing 8 total cumulative those first 3 weeks. So if you take his just week 4 to week 16 stats, and you extrapolate those over a 16-game season, he was looking at a 969-yard receiving season.
Yeah.
Right? Those first 3 games, only 8 targets. And then all of a sudden, he really starts ripping it to get more comfortable with him in the offense. I don't anticipate him only seeing 8 targets over the first 3 games here in Philadelphia. Right? That would be surprising to me. I think he's obviously still going to be used as a secondary piece here in Philadelphia. I don't necessarily think he's going to see incredible targets. Like that amount of target that you have him seeing over that 16-game stretch when he was successful in Baltimore,
right,
that would have been 111 targets.
Yep.
Right? And you know, that's 6.9 a game, that's 7 a game. I think that's a few too many. But we're talking about a guy who's looking at 15 yards per reception across that very productive streak. And 15 yards per reception, if you're just hitting 4-3 receptions a game, yeah, he's going to be clearing 600.
Yeah.
So to me, Mike Wallace, I think, is the guy that I anticipate to, yeah, be able to hit that receiving yard total. I think he's going to have a couple 100-yard games for Philadelphia where they really like what they can do deep against some slower corners. I like that a lot. And then I'm going to give him over on the receiving touchdowns because, as I think is a pretty clear theme here, one of the things I anticipate happening in this offense is it getting a little bit more deep-oriented. It using Wallace a little bit more down the field, using those two tight end sets to really drag safeties down the field, forcing teams to play in cover 3, forcing teams to ask their corners to cover 1-on-1 down the field. It opens up a lot of shots for you. So I'm bullish on what Mike Wallace can do in this offense. It has me really excited, especially for as long as Alshon is dealing with recovery. He's a guy they're definitely not going to rush Mike Wallace, I'm big on him this year.
Yeah, and look at Wallace's past stats and then realize he's dealing with Joe Flacco as a quarterback, and now he gets to play with a real quarterback.
Bless.
All right, Nelson Aguilar, total receiving yards. The over-under is set at 750. He had 768 yards last year. It's hard to see him not topping that performance, Ben, but you get the upgrade on the outside with Wallace, who can contribute in the slot, and I think he may end up just under it. It's not a knock on him, because by all accounts, he's had an amazing camp. Despite missing preseason action, he was uncoverable. But these yards, they got to come off somewhere. If I'm going under with Wentz at 3,800 yards, and this is what Ben will do to me, by the way, so I'm kind of watching this. He'll keep tabs on all the over-unders, and at the end, he'll go, well, Michael, well, actually, with the way that you're betting, it looks like Wentz is going to have 5,000 passing yards this season. Can you please explain that?
I did that last year to you, where you were like, listen, Wentz under 350 yards, all the receivers over. How is this going to happen?
So you're not going to get me this time, Ben. I'm going to go under for Aguilar here, even though week one without Alshon, I think he smashes receiving touchdowns. They have it at 5 for the over-under. I'll go over. He saw a lot of red zone targets last year. I think that stays fairly stable. And I'm sure as I say that, some like analytics nerd is like cringing about stability and red zone targets. But Aguilar has the skill set to win early in routes with the compressed field. And he's shown that he can be a big play threat too. So I'll go over on the 5. What about you, Ben?
750 for Nelson Aguilar is the toughest one for me to bet. Like, to me, that's just perfect. It's like, that's exactly what I get. I like that. That just makes sense for him in this offense. 768 last year. I think this is a pretty important note, and it's what makes me lean under for him. He and Dallas Goedert attack the exact same levels of the field. They attack the exact same areas. And really the only thing, it's the seams when you're going deep. And then it's the middle of the field, short and intermediate. It's just that interior third of the field. And you have to wonder, and this, it's a tough question to answer, because we can't go back to Mike Wallace in Baltimore or whatever, how much Dallas seeps away from him. That's, kind of the big question. That Dallas kicks me towards the under, and then I remember that Nelson has the most receiving experience with Carson if Alshon goes out. And I remember that Nelson can also go out wide and threaten down the field, and that if they don't have Alshon, then they're going to need him to do that. this is a very, very tricky one to me. I would stay far away from this if I was betting it. I would probably, I want to say the under, but all it's going to take is one huge explosion for him week two. Let's not forget, Philadelphia has week two, Tampa. Terrible secondary.
Week three.
Just off.
Colts.
Right. But I'm saying like Alshon, what we hear right now is Alshon out, right?
Oh, I got
Alshon
you.
Might get active week three, right? Yeah. If there's no Alshon week two, Nelson's got Vernon Hargraves maybe in the slot. Maybe MJ Stewart, the rookie.
Toasty.
Justin Evans is the safety. Aguilar's over 250. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And that one game is that might be like the difference when we get to the end of the season. So the Aguilar one, I guess I'll just take the under so I have an actual official take, but I hate it. Touchdowns is interesting. That, that 768 yards was a lot due to an increase in target for Aguilar last year. His yards per reception remained right around where it had been for his career. He had 3 total touchdowns over 2 seasons, and then in his third campaign, he puts up 8. So touchdown is where I would expect a little bit of a regression. Is he going to regress past 5? I would say no. I would say with the way that he was used as far as excellent separator, which is a hugely important thing there in the red zone, the fact that he definitely got those targets when they got inside of the 50, right around the 40 when you start taking your deep shots.
Yeah.
They loved hitting Aguilar in those deep ones. There was the Arizona touchdown, the Washington touchdown. I think Seattle, he got a shot like that as well. Or no, excuse me, Seattle was the deep ball up against our own end zone, the Carson gigantic throw. Either way, I like that usage for him, potentially hitting a couple big touchdowns. So maybe I take the over on the 5. Aguilar was a tough one to riddle out.
So, yeah, that's a tricky one for me, too. If I was a betting man, I am. I'm staying away from that one in real life. But for these purposes, I feel what you're saying there. Zach Ertz, let's move on to him. Receiving yards, over under set at 850. Last 3 seasons for Ertz, 853, 816, and 824. And that's with 15, 14, and 14 games played, respectively. You subtract Trey Burton and Brent Celek. You add Dallas Goedert. And that's tough. There's no denying that the Eagles are extremely efficient passing the ball out of 12 personnel. We've talked about it a lot, whether that be from tight alignments or by a 3-by-1 trips formation or another formation. But I'm going to bet that Goddard makes a decent contribution to the passing game this year. Nothing gaudy, but solid this year. And I'll go under on Ertz for that. And then with receiving touchdowns, the over-under is set at 6.5. Last year, Ertz had 8. It was the first time he's been over 4 in his career. Teams really started to key in on him as the season went on. But the Eagles are also loaded with solid red zone receivers and do really well to get Ertz on favorable matchups. It's tough. I'm going to go under on both.
Yeah, I think under I'm comfortable with Ertz at 850 solely because, like you said, even when he was at his best, 853 was the number that he was hitting. We've only seen about 24, 25 tight end seasons over the past 5 years. So about 5 per season go above 850. And on a team that spreads the ball around this much, Zach Ertz may be a top 5 tight end, but I'm not sure he sees that yardage sort of input. To me, I like the over on touchdowns. I don't have the red zone target numbers for Philadelphia, so it's anecdotal. It's my eyes. It's not the actual stats. But I don't know. When they needed a touchdown against the Patriots to put the game away, they put Ertz on the backside and threw it to him right on a predetermined read. Like, they constantly look for ways to get him open in the red zone. And I don't remember all of the passes that he missed or he dropped or inaccurate or where he was covered or whatever. But he clearly, to me, is when they get in the red zone, it's all right, what are we dialing up for Zach?
Yeah.
Right, that's the first thing. So while I anticipate Goddard eating into his yardage pretty significantly, I think I'm probably higher on how much I would expect Goddard to contribute this year as far as yardage goes. I think still in the red zone, Goddard is a good player there in the red zone. But Ertz is, what's Ertz's best ability? It's leverage, it's physicality, it's the ability to, I might be covered, but you can throw me open by just putting the ball up here. I'm going to go get him before the other guy gets it. And so I like him in the red zone a good deal. I would hit the over on his 6.5 touchdowns. I expect him to continue to be very, very productive in there.
Yeah, and I can definitely respect that. Like you touched on, I touched on it too. They get him on matchups that they like, and he is fantastic at the top of his route with physicality, using the leverage to tilt a defensive back or a linebacker one way or another and getting open immediately to have a catch window for a quarterback to throw it in there. Okay, we're going to flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. These are actually pretty this first one's pretty easy for me. Fletcher Cox, total sacks in 2018. The over-under is set at 6. He's going for defensive player of the year this year, and he has been unblockable in preseason. I'm smashing the over. Despite him only getting 6 sacks twice in 6 years, it's pretty easy for me on that one. Smash the over. Ben, are you doing the same?
Oh, comfortably. Fletcher Cox has me drinking the juice this year. I'm all about it. He clearly, to me, seems like a player who's got an idea in mind. And let's not forget, before Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack were out there getting record-setting contracts, Fletcher Cox was out there getting the most guaranteed money ever given to a defensive lineman at his time. And so he... you know, all right, the guys across the pond, the guys over on the other coast are starting to kind of get their deals, gotten put into new teams. Cox kind of wants to remind everybody who he is. And the most important thing, I think, is that Jim Schwartz has to be able to scheme him clear without Timmy Jernigan. That's the one concern that I would have, because it looks like Jernigan isn't going to be a consistent contributor this season because of health. And so that might make me a little bit worried. But then I've watched Fletcher Cox put enough guards on skates to know that he's good for more than a few pressures a game. I like the 6 sacks number for him. Looking at the next one, I'm not sure how much I like Michael Bennett at 7 sacks. I don't know about you, but that number scares me off.
That's another one I'm pretty confident about. The snaps have to be there for Bennett for him to get close to that. And, I mean, it helps that Timmy Jernigan won't be playing soon, but this is definitely a tough one for me. I love what he brings to this defense. There's no question about that. You can kick him inside. He can play 4-eye. He can play the edge. He's great on stunts, and that's something I think they're going to try to use to get him open on with Cox, using Cox as a smasher, using Ben as a smasher. I think they're going to do great stuff up front there. But does he get over 65% of the snaps, which no Eagles defensive lineman achieved last year? Only Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox came close to 65%. So I think that, you know, he's going to be very impactful, and that should not be understated. But I think he comes in under 7 sacks.
Yeah, no, to me, exactly. It comes back to the snap count point, which is simply that I can't tell you where Michael Bennett is in the sub-package rotation, in the, okay, maybe he can give us defensive tackle style of snaps and penetration. I can't tell you where he is there, but I can very easily tell you he's defensive end 4 in traditional defensive end looks. And I don't bank on any defensive end 4 getting at least 7 sacks. I don't care what team you're on. I don't care how talented you've been. You know what I mean? Like, you, that's not a high number of snaps from just a traditional edge rushing position. I can't buy that.
I still buy his impact, but I'm not buying the 7 sacks. Speaking of 7 sacks, can Brandon Graham for the second consecutive...
Yes. What?
Keep jumping the gun. Apparently, Ben thinks that Brandon Graham is going to be over on the 7 sacks as the over-under number there. I'm going to agree. He came into his own last year. He's so doggone valuable and really, really good, man. He's so talented. He uses his hands and his power so well. Ben, what you got, man?
There's 2 words I'm going to say. And what are the 2 words?
Strawberry Gatorade.
Contract year.
Oh.
It's contract year. Yeah. It's an edge rusher in a contract year
who has
explicitly told the world he is looking for the big bag.
Yeah.
Graham is going to head hunt this year, let me tell you. No Jernigan means more interior snaps for him, which he did a great job with last year. No Vinnie Curry, who to me was a solidly productive pass rusher last year on the opposite edge. Yep. He gets replaced likely in starting snaps by Derek Barnett, who, as we all know, I don't probably think is as good of a pass rusher as Vinnie Curry was last year. So, the cards on the table, or the numbers in the cards. What's the idiom? It's in the cards. It's just plainly in the cards. It's in the cards. That's what it is. So it's in the cards.
Yeah.
For Brandon Graham, I anticipate him hitting that 7 number. Obviously, it's, you know, that 2-digit sack year is the number that Graham has circled. I can promise you, because how, you know, it's a colloquial number we use: 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard receiver, double-digit sack guy. Like, that's just an arbitrary benchmark that's been placed in the general narrative, and so it matters. You know, that he wants that signifier. He wants that adjective. So I think Brandon Graham's, he's not looking at 7, man. He's looking at 7 by week 12. My man wants 10. I anticipate him having a very, very productive year.
Yeah, and not just the contract year. He's incentivized to get more sacks with the way that they restructured his contract. So, yeah, he's doubly motivated to get in there and get him some sack lunches. All right, so that's does it for all the individual players. We'll go on to one last prediction here. The Philadelphia Eagles over under for wins at 10.5. Ben, are you going to upset the fan base right now and turn everyone against us?
Okay, no. Over on 10.5 very, very comfortably. That ain't a hassle, man. I would like to say, before I move away from the player ones, that I find it very funny that BLG in our list did not include Derek Barnett over under sacks, because I'll tell you exactly why. I'll tell you exactly why he didn't. Because he and I basically agree on what number we should anticipate for Derek Barnett. It's just that he is not a known Barnett detractor. Yeah, and I'm a known Barnett detractor, so I'm exposing him right now and saying, because I guarantee you, if it had been on the list, first thing I would have said was, okay, BLG also thinks he's only going to have like 5-6 sacks this year. But he and I are on the list, so I'm just preempting the whole nonsense. Here's my deal with Philadelphia. I think you circle about 4 or 5 games. You circle the Falcons game week 1. You circle the Vikings game in week 5. Then you circle the Saints game in what would I think be week 11 after the bye. You circle the Rams game in week 15. And those are the 4 games that... Oh, and Jacksonville, I should say, in London.
Yeah.
Those are the 5 games that you circle for Philadelphia. They should be reasonably expected to win all 6 of their division games, barring injury.
Yeah.
They're out of schedule game against Carolina. Or they're playing the NFC South this year. So the Carolina game, right, some might have them, you know, dealing with a little bit. They should be expected to win that. Texans in week 16. Maybe Houston's pushing for a playoff spot at this point. Maybe they're as high powered as some expect them to believe, or as some expect them to be with Deshaun Watson. I'm not really there on that yet. To me, you know, of those 11 games, okay, they drop 1, they drop 2. Then it's 9-2, 10-1 over that stretch. And then the 5 big ones, you expect them to go 3-2 on those. And now all of a sudden we'll have a 12-13 win team, which I think most people expect. So yeah, over 10.5 very comfortably.
I'm glad you laid that out, because I absolutely agree with you there as far as the logic.
Right, I have one team one for you. Over under Philadelphia playoff seed in the NFC, 2.5.
How are we doing this? Because better is usually over. Would it be under for me to go like 1 or 2?
You're right. It's kind of flipped. Okay, so are they going to be seed higher than 2.5? So over, in the sense that they'd be 1 or 2 seed, or are they going to be coming under that number, a lower playoff seeding at 3, 4, 5, 6?
So that I'm going to go with a higher. I think I think they're two at worst.
That's where I would put them at as well. 1.5 would have been interesting, but just mathematically, yeah, you have to smash the under on that because of the likelihood. But I definitely think you're looking at a first round bye sort of a team here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that does it for the over-under show. We also got you caught up on some practice squad guys and some moves for the roster, which we will be updating you throughout this week as we roll into week one of the 2018 regular season as the Eagles try to defend their Super Bowl championship. Ben, so what we have for the rest of the week, I'm going to be talking with Eric Crocker from 4th and 9 about some defensive backs. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of defensive back play. I'll be talking with him on Monday. That'll drop on Tuesday. Then we also have an NFC East Supercast that we'll be talking with different writers from around the NFC East from SB Nation, kind of getting the state of the union for their teams. We'll have our preview for the game with the Falcons. We'll have the general preview with Brandon Lee Gouton and John Stolness on BGN Radio. And we're just bringing content after content after content for you here on Bleeding Green Nation. Ben, would you say goodbye to the gentle listeners, please?
Oh, gentle listeners, it is week one. Officially week one. It is Monday, so it is week one-ish. It's week zero. We're approaching week one of the NFL season. This was the last Sunday without NFL football until February, Michael. Technically end of January if you don't count the Pro Bowl, which you really shouldn't. But we say February because it makes us feel better. It is a thrilling time to be alive. Over at Bleeding Green Nation, it's obviously a swell of content now with the roster being finalized. You can expect mailbag posts, you can expect some film breakdowns on the new edition, i.e. DeAndre Hall, and you can expect the film preview coming up for the Atlanta Falcons and what we should anticipate from them in the upcoming Thursday night matchup. Man, oh man, it's good to be back into the season, Mike. I'm excited. As always, I have been Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak, that's S-O-L-A-K. He's Michael Kist on Twitter, at Michael Kist NFL, that's K-I-S-T. Rate, review, and subscribe. Like us on Facebook so we can have, what, how much is it? 1,000? 300? Something like that.
Oh, 1,000. We are over 1,000 followers for at BGN, BGN underscore radio on Twitter. Continue to pile that on. I think we're going for 2,000 likes on the old Facebook there. But yeah, 5 stars, man. 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars.
Yeah, actually, if you try to input a lower than 5-star review, it doesn't work. That's what I've heard. Not that you should try it. You should just take my word for it. But I've heard it makes your computer shut down and it douses you with cold water. So yeah, only 5-star reviews here at BGN Radio, Kist and Solak Show.
Yeah, do that for us because we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly. Douses you with water? Do computers come with water now?
Well, I want it like you know, when a dog is bad, you like spray it? Like, psh.
You could have spray our listeners like a dog?
Okay, so you know Modern Family, right?
Yeah.
Right, so there's that gif now of the dad, and he's spraying his son, the one with the spray bottle, right? Yeah, that is to me the funniest gift on the face of the planet. I think that's the funniest thing in the world. And the next person who comes to my mentions being annoying about like Barnett or about my takes on a college player or something, first thing I'm doing is I'm just pulling out that gift and being like, get out of the mentions. I think that's the funniest thing in the world.
I like that. That and the one of you riding the bike, that's a deadly combo to deal with your mentions. Bye-bye. That's nice. You got a lot of ammo.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.